Thanks for joining us for today's edition of the Portland Christian Center podcast. This week, Pastor Ray Noah continued our series, Extra Grace Required, with a message titled, The Critic. Now here's Pastor Ray.
Well, there were two taxidermists who were wandering down the street one day, and they came upon a storefront, and they noticed in the window of this store there was an owl, a mounted owl, just sitting there, and they immediately began to criticize it. One said to the other, "That looks awful. Its eyes are out of whack." And the other one said, "Yeah, I mean, its head is way out of proportion to its wings." And they both agreed that the feathers were all messy and matted. It just looked horrible, and the feet were misaligned. And they were really just tearing it apart, and they said, "You know, these guys really needed our artistry. They need our help." Well, about that time, the old owl cocked its head and winked at them. Everybody's a critic, right? Everybody is a critic. Now, I would argue that the most perplexing and persistent challenge that we face through authentic faith is the difficult people that strain and drain our relational capacities. And yet, by design, God has given them access to our lives for the sake, apparently, of our growth into Christ-likeness. And so applying biblical principles to these what we call EGR relationships, extra grace required relationships, apparently is necessary to our faith development, to our spiritual depth, and to our Christian witness. In other words, we need extra grace required people in our lives. Whether we know it or not, they are God's gift to us. They really are. And so that's why we're in this important series to learn how to apply biblical principles to these many kinds of extra grace relationships. And that is why God has told us through the Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 12 and verse 18, a very powerful, practical, but difficult verse to apply. God has told us, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. I love that verse. It has so many qualifiers to it, doesn't it? It's just, if it's possible, if you can pull it off, as much as it depends on you, because sometimes it depends on somebody else too, but if you can do it, then live in harmony, even with your extra grace required relationship people, including the critic. Anyone have a critic in your life? Don't raise your hand right now. Anyone have a critic in your life? Including the critic, which is hands down the number one EGR relationship that you voted for me to talk about in this series. So apparently there are a few of you who have a critic in your life, and I think this is probably true society-wide. We all have people in our lives who have it as their calling to criticize us. Everyone's a critic. So what that means is, if everyone's a critic, what that means is you are sitting next to one. And guess what? They're sitting next to one as well. Everyone is a critic. Everybody's got an opinion. And to be human is to be the subject of somebody's opinions. Much of the time, uninvited. Some of the time, maybe most of the time, that criticism is unfair. The only way to escape criticism is to do nothing, say nothing, and be nothing. The only way. Do nothing, say nothing, and be nothing. So if you're alive, are you alive? Check your pulse just to make sure. If you're alive, the critic will likely be your most difficult relationship. It's going to be up there probably in the top three or four or five for sure, because everybody's a critic and everybody has a critic. They're the boss, they're the coworker. They're the partner, they're the friend, they're the sibling, they're the spouse who will size you up so that they can pick you apart. Size you up and pick you apart. They're self-appointed experts on you. And they second-guess your shortcomings. They cast doubt on your decisions. They make it their ministry to fix your faults. The critic. The critic has a wonderful plan for your life. Just ask them. Or don't. They will tell you anyway. They have a wonderful plan for your life. But, there's always a but, right? But, guess what? You need them. You need the critic. and so do I. That's why God allows, maybe even I would go so far as to say God places the critic in our life. We just have to learn how to manage them. We have to learn how to limit their negativity and then leverage their criticism for positive change in our lives. That's God's plan for us, to use those people to grow us into Christ-likeness, to grow our faith or to deepen our faith and to expand who we are in Jesus Christ. We have to learn how to leverage the criticism of the critic. Just like Walt Disney. I read about Walt Disney this week, and apparently he was flat broke when he took his idea for a cartoon to Hollywood, Steamboat Willie. Steamboat Willie. And the critics in Hollywood told him that they weren't buying it, that they didn't think the idea of a talking mouse with a falsetto voice would sell very well in the days of silent film. I think Mickey Mouse did okay, don't you? But they say that those who knew Disney said that he actually fed off criticism. He fed off criticism. And they said he would ask 10 people about an idea, and if they all were unanimous in rejecting that idea, then he would say, great, and he would get to work on it ASAP. He fed off criticism. Well, to succeed in life, and more importantly, to grow in faith, you've got to learn to be thankful for the critic. Paul calls them a thorn in the flesh. Now, some theologians think that Paul was literally, when he talked about that thorn in his flesh, that he was referring to a literal person who was critiquing him or criticizing him. And so when Paul began to pray about this person and he said, God, please take this person from me. Lord, deliver them, rapture them, do something with them. The Lord said to Paul, Paul, no. But my grace is sufficient. My grace is sufficient. And so then Paul goes on to say, and I love the way this is put in the Message version of the Bible. He says, so then I quit focusing on the thorn and began appreciating the gift. Do you have appreciation for your critic? Do you have appreciation for whatever your thorn is? Maybe it's another EGR type of relationship. Do you have appreciation for them? My grace is sufficient, so appreciate the gift. Now, I'm going to invite you, if you would, to turn in your Bibles. I hope you have one. I want to invite you to turn to the Old Testament, to the book of 2 Samuel chapter 16, because I want us to look at how this plays out in the life of one of my heroes in the faith, King David. 2 Samuel chapter 16, and in this narrative here, verses 5 through 14, we're going to see how David faced devastating criticism. This is devastating criticism, and yet skillfully dealt with one of his EGRs, a man named Shimei, or in the Hebrew, it's Shimei. He dealt with his EGR with a boatload of grace. I mean, wow. When we read this story, I think you'll see what I'm talking about. And as we unpack this story, we're going to discover, I hope and I believe, we're going to discover tools to help us to deal with our EGR, with our critic. Because again, we all have one, don't we? So let's read the text and then we'll talk about it. Starting in verse 5. It says, as King David fled Jerusalem. Now, why was he fleeing Jerusalem? Well, the context of this story is that David is on the run, and he's got his entourage with him. They are fleeing for their lives. Why? Because there is trouble in David's kingdom, primarily coming from David's family. His family is a wreck, and his favorite son, Absalom, has usurped the throne, and he's going after David. He's going to kill his own father so that he can be unopposed as the new king of Israel. So David packs up and his entourage, his troops, his family hastily flee Jerusalem. So as King David fled Jerusalem, Shimei, a man from Saul's clan, came out and he cursed and he pelted David and his officials with stones, though the king's troops were on his right and on his left. And as he cursed, Shimei said, "Get out, you murdering scoundrel! God has repaid you for all the blood you shed in the household of Saul, in Saul's household, in whose place you have reigned. God has given the kingdom into your son Absalom's hand. You have come to ruin because you are a murderer." Then Abishai, son of Zeruiah, said to David, "Why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over and cut off his head." Oh, I love Abishai, don't you? Pastor Joel, would you be my Abishai? Are you my Abishai? Everybody needs an Abishai. Hey, that's a dead dog. Let me go cut his head off. And listen to what David said. But David said, "What does this have to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah?" Now, the sons of Zeruiah, they are actually very close to David because they are his nephews. And the sons of Zeruiah are Abishai, Asahel, and Joab. Joab was a general in David's army, and the three were mighty men. They were fighting men. They were three of David's mightiest men, and they were also related to him, and they were right with him. They had his back. They had it covered. But David had this very uncomfortable relationship with them because he loved at times what they did. He loved their courage. He loved their bravery. He loved their loyalty, but they kind of went overboard at times. And so David was kind of repulsed and attracted to the sons of Zeruiah at the same time. He says, what does this have to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah? If he, that is Shimei, if he is cursing because the Lord said to him, 'Curse David,' who can ask, 'Why do you do this?'" Then David said to Abishai and to all his officials, "My own son is trying to kill me. How much more then this Benjamite? Leave him alone. Let him curse, for the Lord has told him to. It may be that God will look upon my misery and restore to me his covenant blessing instead of his curse today." Verse 13, "So David and his men went on the road, while Shimei went along on the hillside opposite him and cursed as he went, and he threw stones at him, and he flung dust. And the king, along with all the people who were with him, arrived weary at the Jordan, and there David refreshed himself." Now, to unpack Shimei is to understand the critic's motives. And I want to say a word about understanding, because this is critical to this story, and it's critical to all of these categories of EGRs that we're going to come across. Understanding. The book of Proverbs talks about wisdom and knowledge and what? Understanding. Understanding is the key thing here, because from understanding springs empathy and patience that turns on the spigot of David-like grace. Understanding produces empathy and patience. And if you're going to manage an EGR, if you're going to turn an EGR relationship into a redemptive relationship, then you are going to need foundationally understanding. Empathy comes from it, patience comes from it, and from that flows David-like grace, or God's more grace, or extra grace. And so, as we understand Shimei, we understand his motivations. And I want to show you four of his motivations that are four typical motivations of every critic, most every critic. So here they are. Number one, the critic is often frustrated. Why do they criticize? Well, often, beneath all of that, there's frustration. Verse 5 says that Shimei was from the clan of King Saul. Saul had been deposed from the kingdom, from being king by death. And along with that, Saul's family, they were a big deal. Royal family is a big deal in Israel, as in any country. And when Saul died and the kingdom was taken from him and given to David, they lost everything. They lost their right to the throne, which they assumed would be theirs in perpetuity. They lost their right to Israel's monarchy. And Shimei never resolved that resentment. And so when the opportunity came, he vented that frustration on David. And you will find that that is typically true of the critic. Something is eating them, so they chew on you. Something's eating at the critic. And so what do? When opportunity comes, they chew on you. So the critic is often frustrated. Two, the critic is usually hurting. The critic is usually hurting. Verse 6 says that Shimei came out cursing and pelting David with stones. He was trying to hurt David. Why is that? His family had been shamed. They had been consigned to a life of out of the limelight. They no longer had the ability to make the money, to hold the wealth, to have the power, the authority, the fame that they once had. And he blamed David. Now, the blame was misplaced because David didn't kill Saul. David was nothing but loyal to Saul. Remember that? It was Saul who had a hatred, insane jealousy of David, a hateful, insane jealousy. But David was always loyal. So really, it's not true, and he's blaming the wrong person, but he is. He's blaming David for all of the clan of Saul's ill that had befallen them. He was hurtful because he was hurting. He was hurtful because he was hurting. And let me just say this. I think this one statement I'm about to make is worth the price that you paid to get in here today. So if you don't do anything else, write this one down. You will find that in a critic, hurt people hurt people. Say that with me because I want this to stick with you. Hurt people hurt people. If you have someone hurting you, they're hurt. And if you're hurting someone, you're hurt. Hurt people hurt people. 3, the critic is typically arrogant. Not only are they frustrated, not only are they themselves hurting, but they kind of have this presumptuous mindset or mentality that there's an arrogance about them. Verse 7, we see that Shimei assumed God's authority. You notice how he's now starting to talk for God? You know, he's upset, he's hurting, he's frustrated, there's fear in his life. He fears the loss of identity, the loss of comfort, the loss of security. He's hurting. But he assumes God's voice, and he says, God repaid you by handing your kingdom over to Absalom. He's speaking for God. And that's what critics sometimes do, don't they? Don't they presume to speak for God, or they speak for everybody else? You know, and don't sometimes, when you're under the barrage of a critic, don't you just want to say to them, hey, who died and made you God over me? Because the critic assumes the role, the voice of God. So they're arrogant. There's an arrogance about that. And then fourth, the critic is always persistent. Boy, they got one quality going for them, don't they? They are persistent. They endure. They don't give up. They don't give in. Like Henry Gripper. You know who Henry Gripper is, don't you? We never give up. We never give in. No, you don't get it. So watch a little more TV and you'll understand what I'm talking about. They don't give up. Sometimes they try. Sometimes a critic will say, you know, I just got to quit this. But they cannot stand not fixing you. So they're back at it. And because of that, the critic, the chronic critic, is exhausting. They're exhausting. They win. They win by attrition. Verse 14 says that David got to the place, and when he arrived there, when he arrived at the Jordan, he was exhausted. He was depleted. He was worn out. Now listen, if you are enduring a critic, chances are those same four traits are true of them. Those same four things you're experiencing at the hand of a critic. They're frustrated, they're hurting, but there's an arrogance in their criticism about you, and their persistence in your life is exhausting. But to deal with a critic in a David-like way, with David-like grace, the first thing that you have to do, if you're gonna leverage this for your good and God's glory, the first thing you have to do with your critic is to understand them. Try to understand them. Now, for what I'm about to say, the rest of this message, I want to issue a caveat. Here's a caveat. Not all critics are alike. They don't come in the same shape, size, color. They are different. They're varied. They're not all alike. And at one end of the spectrum is a mean-spirited critic. The mean-spirited critic. They are toxic, and they will destroy you. And the toxic critic needs strict boundaries. So this isn't about just understanding them and just kind of letting them do their damage in their life. If there's a toxic critic in your life, they need boundaries or they will destroy you. Now, let me just say this, that that if you are in a relationship with a mean-spirited, toxic critic, and you don't hold the power, then that's a challenge. I mean, you can't go to your boss and say, hey, it's about time we talk about some boundaries here. I wouldn't encourage you to go to your teacher and say, your principal and say, hey, look, you don't like my grades, let's draw some boundaries on this thing here, okay? So in all seriousness, if you don't have the power and you're under the spell, the domination of a critic, I would encourage you to talk to me or any one of our staff, because we would like to coach you in how to draw some boundaries when you don't have the power. So that's one end of the spectrum. On the other end of the spectrum, and this is really mostly what I'm talking about today, at the other end of the spectrum is the critic who genuinely cares for you, but they're just misguided. They genuinely care, but they're misguided. They deserve your attention. Now, there's some boundaries with them as well, but they deserve some attention, and I want to talk about that. But let me just say, this is what explains, I think, if you're going to gain understanding, this is what explains the critic, especially the misguided critic. Now, listen, let me just also say this. I guess here's a second caveat. This doesn't excuse them. It explains them. Often when you read the Bible, you think, man, is it excusing that kind of behavior, especially in the Old Testament? If you're journeying through on the McShane Bible plan like I am, you see stuff and the Bible doesn't seem to, it just reports it, and you're going, how does it include this stuff in here? Listen, the Bible is explaining things. It's explaining human nature. It's explaining sin. It's explaining history. But when it doesn't bring a judgment against that action, it's not excusing it. Again, it's just explaining. So this explains, it doesn't necessarily excuse the efforts or the damage of a critic. And that's a big difference. It's a big difference. So hang on to that. But here's what explains the critic. They believe that their criticism is justified. They believe that they're justified in offering you a critique. And they will often say, how many times have you heard this? That, you know, I don't want to criticize. But, yeah, I don't want to be critical, but, and then they go on to be critical. They honestly believe that if they don't point it out, you won't know what's wrong with you. They believe that. And so they are justified in their criticism. Not only that, they believe their criticism is helpful. The misguided but well-intended critic, they believe their criticism is going to be helpful. They think that the best way to fix a fault is to expose it to the light of day. And they will do that even when they've not been invited to do that. They think they're being helpful, okay? And then they believe their criticism solves problems. They believe their criticism solves problems. By nature, the critic is a solver in search of a problem. They're a solution waiting to happen. They're putty looking for a crack. They think that they're going to make things better, make life better for you. We do, on our staff here, we do a Team Dimensions leadership assessment. Now, I'm going to put the graphic up there on the screen so you can see it, and you'll know what I'm talking about here. We use this with our staff to talk about how to put teams together, who to look for, and the kind of team members you are bringing onto a team if you're running a business, or this just even operates in the relational world of life in general, and how to become a highly productive or an innovative or a high-performance team. And so we identify four categories, and you'll see those up there. There is the creator or the visionary, and this is really showing a process. The creator or the visionary sends the vision to the advancer, okay, and they kind of mess with it, and they bring it on to what's called the refiner who sees the gaps, who sees the holes and has to fill those holes and fix those faults so that they can send then the vision on to the person who does the execute. They execute on the vision. Well, as I test out on this diagnostic, I am both a visionary, a creator, and a refiner. And so if I don't have an advancer in between me, I will come up with my own vision and then shoot it full of holes. And if I'm not careful, I can't get it moving forward. And so I have to be aware of that. God has given me great vision for stuff. And then I begin to say, man, I got to take care of this and this and this. And I can get so focused on refining it that it doesn't get to the implementation. Now, I've got to be careful in my relationships with other people that my vision for their life doesn't turn into refining their life to the point that they think I am being critical of them. My wife is a creative type. She's a visionary as well. It just so happens also that her love language, the five love languages, is words of affirmation. Well, I'm a refiner, and my love language is works of service or acts of service. And I think that I'm going to love her best by fixing her and helping her to be the best that she can be. And if I'm not very careful, my temperament can come off as critical to her. And I would encourage you to really think about this, because you think you're being helpful, but if you're not careful, you're actually being hurtful because it is coming off as criticism. You have to be affirming in the process of helping them to see the faults or to fix the faults in their lives. It's a very delicate kind of thing. So the critic believes that they are solving a problem. They are a solution looking for a cause. The answer waiting to happen. So, they believe they're justified, they believe they're helpful, they believe they are solving problems. So then, given that basic understanding of the critic in your life, what are the tools that you can use for coping with a critic? Are there some tools that you can use to manage, to cope with, to leverage the critic? Well, there are, yes, thank you for asking, and let me give you some. First of all, so important. And this will be true of every one of these EGR categories that we look at. First of all, face the critic within. If you're going to cope with a critic in your life, face the critic within. Jesus said, first take the plank out of your eye, then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Okay? Now, honestly, there is a bit of critic in all of us. I mean, have you ever tried to motivate your spouse to change through some well-placed criticism? Have you ever tried to maneuver your child to change their behavior by the use of criticism? We've all done that. There's an interesting story. I read this week some research that was done, I don't know why, in this particular town, but there was a small mill town in New England upon which a team of sociologists descended, and they interviewed every single person in this town. And they reported back, and as they were talking to every one of the families and the people involved in it, that lived in this town, the people were absolutely scandalized to hear that they had been criticized by other people in the town. They thought it was a scandal. They were aghast. What? I've been criticized by my neighbors, by the people I know in this town? They were aghast at that. And yet, every single person in the town freely admitted to criticizing the other people in the town. They were offended that they had been criticized, but criticism freely flowed from their lips as well. There's a bit of a critic in all of us, and we need to recognize that. We need to face that. David recognized his own contribution to the mess that he was in. And that allowed him to give extra grace to Shimei. We're all part critic. And we will start making progress with our critics only when we face the critic within. And so perhaps today, the thing that you need to do is to say, Am I being critical of somebody else? What is my frustration? Why am I doing this? Why am I fearful? What's the insecurity? How am I hurting? Because I'm hurting, am I hurting other people? Maybe you need to repent of the arrogance that you have displayed in speaking for God about them, or you've presumed to speak for the group. Well, we all feel, and maybe you just need to repent of that arrogance. Or simply surrender your determination to fix other people. There are probably a fair number of fixers in this room, including me. And a big step of faith and obedience and discipleship for us is to say, God, I surrender my need to fix somebody else. Maybe that's what you need to do. Say, God, here I am. reveal, I repent of this. Give me grace. Give me more grace. Face the critic within, number one. Second, put yourself in the critic's shoes. Put yourself in your critic's shoes. Try to understand what makes them so critical. I think David didn't lash out at Shimei, partly because he understood that Shimei was speaking out of his loss. I mean, David understood. David knew how much he himself had loved Saul, and he had loved Saul's family, and he had been nothing but patient and gracious with them. And I think understanding that about the family's hurt allowed him to be gracious with this guy who was being so critical of him. You know, nine times out of ten, a critic's criticism is colored by misery, not by meanness. Nine times out of ten, it's not about meanness. It's about their hurt, their pain. So look beyond your hurt, the hurt you receive in being criticized, and see their hurt. That's called empathy. Empathy. And empathy, putting yourself in another person's shoes, understanding, trying to understand where they come from, is necessary to the flow of grace. Empathy opens the spigot to God's grace. Third, put yourself in the critic's shoes. Number two, third, don't close your ear entirely to what the critic says. Don't shut them off. Don't reject it out of hand. The greatest temptation that we face is to tune them out, especially if they're a chronic critic in our lives. Listen to what David said in verse 10. He was open to the possibility that maybe Shimei was indeed speaking for God. Verse 10, he says, if the Lord has told him to curse me. Maybe God did, David says. And then quickly in verse 11, he concludes that God did. He says, God told him to do it. Don't shut him off. God told him to do it. Now, David is operating from a principle of emotional intelligence that I want to give you in an earthy kind of way. So mark this down as well. When you are facing criticism, learn to chew the meat and spit out the bone. That is a characteristic of high emotional intelligence. When I'm being criticized, I'm gonna eat what's nutritious and throw away the rest. Chew the meat and spit out the bone. Proverbs 15:30 says, he who listens to a life-giving rebuke will be at home among the wise. One of the great missionaries of 100 years ago, a guy by the name of E. Stanley Jones, a great theologian as well, said this. He said, the critics are the unpaid watchmen of my soul. That's emotional intelligence. The critics are the unpaid watchmen of my soul. So don't shut your ear to what the critic has to say. But fourth, limit the criticism that you will accept. Limit the criticism that you will accept. When you receive mean-spirited criticism meant to devastate you or to destroy you, realize that it says more about them than it does you. When you have a toxic critic or one that just seems like they're trying to destroy who you are, that's saying more about them than it does about you. Have you ever let one mean-spirited critic keep you from recognizing the affirmation of a dozen other people that believe in you and affirm you and love you? I mean, have you ever let that happen to you? You have not limited the criticism that they are throwing your way. And that's why you've got to set your boundaries. You got to set your boundaries. And that's why in setting boundaries, and here's one of the things that you need to do that, to be able to do that, you need spiritually mature friends at times to help you to sort the valid from the invalid criticism. Many years ago, I took a broadside. It seemed out of nowhere. I took a broadside by a mean-spirited and toxic critic. Now, as I say that, I want you to know that I don't get a lot of that. I mean, I think maybe some of you think that pastors just get criticized all the time. They live under that, and I think some pastors do. I have friends. I'm in a peer group and interact with pastors, and I think, oh my goodness, you must pastor a mean church. In your church, the sheep bite. But God has graced me in the church I pastored in California and the church here with very sweet sheep. You're a sweet sheep. You really are. I don't know, maybe the Lord knows I'm too wimpy to handle a mean bunch, but I just haven't had to deal with a lot of criticism. But periodically, you know, a broadside can come my way, and I just was broadsided by, it was horrible. And I remember going back to some of my confidants on the team, and I remember Linda, when I told her what had happened, she said something to me that was, I think, just one of the, I will always remember this, and it's become a principle in my life when there is a broadside from a mean-spirited, toxic critic. She said this, "Ray, don't take that into your spirit." Now, sometimes she might say of someone, yeah, just listen to what they're saying and figure it out, but she recognized, she discerned that that was a toxic criticism. And she said, "Ray, don't take that into your spirit." So how do you determine to embrace or reject a critic's criticism? Let me give you two steps, just two simple steps. One, and this is where you might have to have the help of a friend, discern their motives. Discern their motives. Are they trying to be helpful or hurtful? Try to discern their motives. Abraham Lincoln said, "He has the right to criticize who has the heart to help." That's good. That's profound. If they don't have the heart to help, they're trying to hurt, whether they know it or not. So discern the motives of the critic. Here's step number two. This is I use this all the time, and I think it's fantastic to use in your relationships, in church, at work, in school, in your home. Determine your ground rules. Determine your rules. Discern their motives, and then determine your rules. One of the ways that I do this is by use of what I call a pro and a con card. If someone wants to offer me criticism, or if I invite someone to offer me criticism in something I'm working on, or who I am, or you know, an event that I'm leading and I need to get some helpful feedback on that, I use what is called a pro and a con card. It's a 5x7 or 3x5, doesn't matter what you use, a card. And on one side of the card, it says pros, and the other side says cons, pros and cons, right? And I ask them, first of all, to write down three things that they really liked about what I did and why they liked it, because I want the positive. Hopefully it wasn't all horrible. So find the good. Find the good and start with the good, right? So tell me, if you're going to criticize me, tell me what you like about what I do or about what I did, and tell me why. On the con side, I say, and no more than three, because there's only so much you can handle at one time. Give me three things that you would say I need to change. Not that you didn't like, not that you're going to say that you were horrible at that, just three things that you would change if you were in my place and how you would do it differently. Don't just give me criticism, give me your solution. I'll tell you, using a pro and a con card does amazing things. Amazing things for relationships. And it provides a path for people to offer constructive or helpful criticism. Okay? So, discern the motives, determine the ground rules, and make sure that you limit the kind of criticism that you will accept. Okay, last one. Fifth, at all costs, keep your dream alive. Keep your dreams alive. See, criticism is deadliest when it's aimed at your aspirations or your identity. Okay? So don't allow a critic to kill either one of those. David didn't. He found a way, verse 14, last verse, David found a way to get away from the critic, and there he refreshed himself in the Lord. If you're enduring a critic, let me summarize. If you're enduring a critic, look past your hurt to see theirs. Hear what you need to hear, but never give up on what God has placed in your heart or who God has made you to be. You're flawed, you're imperfect, but don't give up on the dream and don't lose your sense of identity. There was an aspiring musician who once gave a concert and was just devastated that the critics in the audience panned his concert, panned his music. They said, that was horrible. And he was so brokenhearted, he was just discouraged by it. There was a famous composer, John Sibelius, that was in the audience, and he came and found the young musician afterwards, and he patted him on the shoulder, and this is what he said. He said, "Son, remember, son, there is no city in the world where they have a statue to a critic. So if you find one, let me know. But as far as I know, no place in the world has a statue to a critic." So remember that. We don't erect statues to critics. So keep your dream alive. Never forget that you are God's workmanship. You're in process. But he began a good work in you, and he will bring it to completion on the day of Jesus Christ. He is perfecting you. You're his masterpiece. That's your identity. The Greek says you're his poem, his work of art. Now, you're flawed. You're working on it. But don't let people steal your identity or what God has called you.
Thanks again for listening to this week's edition of the Portland Christian Center podcast. If you want more information about the ministries of Portland Christian Center or have a prayer need, please visit us online at pcctoday.com. Thanks for listening.